everybody. Welcome back to Screen Heroes, episode 103. It is February 6th. I am Derek,
one of
your regular hosts. I have my two other regular hosts with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
What's up, dude?
And our returning guest, Jordan.
I'm back again.
We're very thankful.
We are very thankful. And we are going to be talking about the best cult films of all time.
No, we're talking about our favorite cult films.
Mine are also the best.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Your favorite stuff is just always the best?
Not always, but usually.
What are you doing?
I'm turning the gain down a little bit because the levels are a little high.
Oh, okay.
So I just wanted to adjust that here for us. That is definitely a little bit better there. So anyway, so we are going to be talking about our favorite cult films of all time.
Yep.
Before we do that, though, we'll go ahead and do some news. Who wants to kick us off?
Well, there was this thing this weekend. Small event. No big deal.
Sports ball.
The Super Bowl happened. And congrats to Philly.
Woo!
Congrats to you.
Very excited.
I'm not going to get tired of sad Tom Brady memes for a while.
Ever.
That'll sustain me for about a week. So that's cool. But lots of new trailers.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, one of the big draws about the Super Bowl for non-football fans are the commercials. There were some
even
fun ones.
Even for football fans, people...
I enjoy the commercials.
Yeah, people like them.
I do. Most expensive TV minute in the world. We had lots of new trailers. We had a bunch of Tide commercials with, what's his name from Stranger
Things?
David
Harbour.
David Harbour.
Definitely
Cowboy.
Trying to save face.
Yeah, actually, those were my favorite commercials.
They were fun.
So I really enjoyed those.
That's, you can afford to do that when all the teenagers in the world are buying your Tide Pods to eat.
I feel a little bad for
They're
Tide.
They're the next voting generation, guys. Yeah.
Don't do that. There are people our age who are doing it too on YouTube. I just want to point that out. So, yeah. Anyway, but there were some new trailers. We got the first teaser for Solo, a Star Wars story.
That was not during the Super Bowl.
No.
It wasn't?
No, that was after Good Morning America.
Yeah.
No, that was the full trailer. There was a teaser.
Technically, there hasn't been a trailer yet. They're both teasers.
Okay, that's not what I've...
A minute and 40 seconds is not a full trailer, I don't think.
They're calling it a trailer.
Maybe they were. I don't know. What, the thing I said, teaser. But it doesn't matter,
okay.
Ultimately.
Well, during the Super Bowl, they aired a teaser for Han Solo
in the Super Bowl. Two collections of clips.
And yes. One of them was during the Super Bowl, is my point.
Yeah.
And then we saw a new trailer slash teaser slash preview for Infinity War.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Short one, but lots of new footage.
Lots of new footage. And was that it for, big new movies? Did we see Skyscraper? Was that the preview?
There was the Cloverfield one, I think.
Skyscraper was in a Cloverfield Paradox.
Yeah. Right.
Which, bold move. They aired right after.
I'm really interested to see how that does.
Yes.
It's not doing well so far.
Is it not?
No.
Okay. Based on views or rating?
Based on ratings.
Okay.
People are watching it.
I'd be curious, to see how many people went and watched it because... It got released so quickly after the first trailer. That would be more of what interests me than the actual rating.
I will say on a personal level, people I actually know seem to really be enjoying it.
Yeah.
It's the critics that really don't like it. So take that for what it's worth.
I saw a hilarious meme the other day that said it tracked the progression of Cloverfields and how the first one only had 3 months of marketing. The second one had a week of marketing. This one had a day of marketing. And then the Cloverfield 4 is J.J. Abrams comes and throws a DVD in your window and just runs away.
I'd be okay with that.
If you get him on the podcast.
Yeah, right? Wait.
J.J.
I thought it looked really interesting. It piqued my interest more than the other two previews, because I actually haven't seen a Cloverfield movie at this point.
I saw the first one, but I did not see the second one.
Okay.
I saw the second one. It was...
Yeah, see, the second one wasn't supposed to be a Cloverfield movie originally.
Right.
They rebranded it that way because nobody was going to put it out.
Right, yeah. So it's been a weird franchise. So let's talk a bit about some of these trailers then. So Solo will just include both teasers at this point since they're out. How do you guys feel?
Awesome. I think that silence is pretty, telling of how we all feel about it, to be honest.
This is the one story I really didn't want. Like, there's five more anthology stories I'd like to see ahead of time, and...
Or even more than that, yeah, like, really.
Yeah. Go back and listen to our Pitch Your Own Star Wars movie, because all three of us... Solo was not on there.
No.
But, I mean, the cast... Like, everything looks pretty, which is what I expect out of a Star Wars film now. It looks captivating. It looks beautiful. Emilia Clarke is, like, wearing... Empire clothes, but also she's not, and it Kira looks cool. She's designed well. Lando looks like a boss.
Yeah. Donald Glover looks good.
He does.
Yeah, I mean, he in the whole trailer definitely was the thing that stood out to me. Like, I could actually see that being a young Lando, whereas the guy that's playing Han Solo does not look like a young Harrison Ford even a little bit. Like, and doesn't sound like it. There's nothing there that's reminiscent to me of Harrison Ford's performance.
It's totally weird to hear him say, I want to be the best pilot in the galaxy. Yeah. Like, that doesn't sound like Han to me.
I don't remember Han. Like, Han never said he was the best pilot. He said that the Falcon was, like, a fastest ship.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a difference. Now, so, Ryan, you know the EU much better than the rest of us here. Did the Falcon look different at some other point and go through some major wreck?
You know, I didn't read anything that took place before the Star Wars. Oh, okay. Like, when I was reading the books, and the other stuff that I'm into was way before the movies, okay, rather than, like, right before. So, I don't know. I don't know.
Because, like, that's throwing me off. Answer. That they're, like, purposely making the Falcon look different. When there's not a lot of time in between this and A New Hope, it can't be more than, like, 10 years, maybe?
Man, he changed a lot in 10 years.
Right?
Well, but Harrison Ford wasn't that old in the original Star Wars.
He was 30.
Right, and so this kid's in his 20s, isn't he?
Probably.
So, yeah. You know, I'm just saying.
I'm really worried that they're, like, making him into be, like, this war hero or something, like, have some, like, universe-shattering event happen that he saves the day on, because Han Solo, the whole appeal of him was that he was just this smuggler at a bar that nobody really knows.
Yeah.
You think that if he was this hero, that everybody at that bar would know who he is, and he wouldn't be going to Jabba to get, you know,
he's a hero of circumstance. He's not the guy that steps up to the plate. He's the guy that doesn't want to bail on his friends.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, though, is, like, his big redeeming moment in A New Hope, and, you know, anything he does after that point would be cheapened if he's already done that.
Yeah,
prior.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's partly why I don't want to see this, is his mysterious background is a positive for his character growth.
I have a weird theory in my head. I'm going to keep it in there until we have seen the film, and then I will tell it to you guys. But it's,
so we don't get that here?
Yeah.
No.
Thanks.
No, I'm working on it.
I think you should make her write it down and put it in an envelope we can leave up there.
I like
okay.
that.
So that way she can't, we know she hasn't manipulated right? it based on having seen the movie or right. anything like that.
I have a theory on who's going to die in Infinity.
Right, yeah, but I'm not going to tell you until after I've seen it.
I refuse to play the Deadpool with that game. I don't want to know who's going to die.
It was just a joke as an example.
But that's something that, like, everybody is doing. And it you know.
Okay, I'll pick a different joke next time then.
Fine.
Sorry.
Thank you, Derek.
Can we move on to, like, our actual podcast topic?
Sure. Done with news then. Short news segment. All right, let's move on. You don't want to talk Infinity War at all?
It looks great. Like it did last time. Nothing's changed.
The fanboys are freaking out that they think Captain Marvel was in one shot.
She's not.
It's not her. Spoiler alert, it's Scarlet Witch. You can tell clearly by the outfit. But everybody thinks it's Captain Marvel. Also, Cap gets a new shield.
That everyone's really
get this man a
about.
Shield is a Wakandan shield that expands out of his bracers, which is really cool. But he won't keep it for long. I was kind of hoping he would get the energy shield that he has in the comic books. But
yeah, it wasn't quite what I anticipated, but it makes sense.
Like, he looks really cool. Yeah, like the shot with him, like walking down the hallway, and Black Widow also looks really cool. The two of them, that was a neat shot, and they both. I really like the direction they've gone with their costumes.
I'm not sure I care for the new design of Tony's arc reactor. It looks like a heart. Like, literally.
Aw, like he's a Care Bear?
Isn't it like a triangle? Maybe I didn't look that closely at
it. It used to be a triangle. It's got, like, a dip in it now.
Oh.
And, I mean, it's obviously just the suit
What
design,
about the armor, though?
Right?
The bleeding edge armor
looks
we're finally
cool.
seeing
yeah, it looks
in
pretty
theaters.
Cool.
If you're not familiar with the comic books, he got an armor called Bleeding Edge. It basically is nanites that come out of his skin and form the armor on him, which is kind of unbelievable, but apparently they're doing it in the MCU, which I think it looks really cool, very sleek.
It's a nice extension of
cosplayers that are going to build it.
Yeah. No. It's a good extension though of Iron Man 3 where he's got the stuff underneath.
Extremis.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a good extension of that, and I think it looks really good.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really the important part in a big ensemble movie like this, because I doubt they can spend too much time explaining the suit.
There's a scene where it looks like Spidey and Doctor Strange and Iron Man are all on Thanos' ship, which is interesting. And
oh, then, is that what that was?
Yeah.
Okay.
When they're all, like, standing there looking kind of, you know, and then there's a scene with Doctor Strange and Iron Man where Iron Man is either ruining whatever Doctor Strange did, or they're teaming up, which I hope is what it is.
Right.
I mean, obviously they're working on the same team, but if they're doing like combos, like the Marvel game, that Ultimate Alliance, that's what I want to see. You know,
all right.
Magic and tech.
Here's something that we haven't seen, and I don't know if it's going to drop like a bomb soon, and we'll get it, or if they're going to surprise us until the day of, or if it doesn't even matter. But the Black Order, the Children of Thanos, they have yet to be shown in anything more than the statues.
Like shadows, really, in the trailers.
Anyway. Right. But, like, who's playing them? What actors are playing them?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
I figured it was probably nobodies.
See, it's either going to be complete nobodies, or they're going to drop, like, four really big actors on us just for fun that are only going to be in this film, because let's face it, the chances of them wiping out...
that'd be really meta. No, I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, they were able to keep it a secret for Ragnarok, so I suppose it's possible. But it is difficult to keep big secrets these days, so I'd be surprised pleasantly, you know, if they were able to pull that off.
How great did Thanos look in that last shot, though? Everybody was complaining about his CG in the first trailer, which I didn't really understand.
His shades of purple have changed, and you can explain that
I think it was lighting. Like, in that first trailer, it was a weird light, you know, and then this one, he looked very purple.
I don't understand.
It doesn't bother me.
Like, it's still a trailer. Like, remember when people freaked out about the doors in the trailer for Jurassic World?
Yeah.
Like, it's a trailer. So the movie's not done yet. That's why we have the trailer, right? So these things are still being worked on. I mean, special effects are worked on until the 11th hour. But this looks
better than a lot of recent movies.
Yes.
Final.
No, not
to bash on Justice League, but I mean, this looks better really than Steppenwolf did in the final release.
It absolutely does. So I'm not sure what people are complaining about.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were expecting, maybe. Like, what they had in their heads. Because I think that looks better than anything I had in mind. So, you know. But, yeah. Talk Rev says Jack Black and his cousins are playing the...
the fatties?
Oh, man. All right. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's coming out.
It's a lot we just talked about for a 60-second trailer, but there was a lot to kind of...
There were just, like, reintroductions, but they were showing us new stuff, so...
Vision looks really hurt in that one shot. He's holding his side, so, you know, that's interesting.
She's doing all that voodoo.
Did he have his mind
gem?
It didn't look like he had his mind gem in when he was walking down that hallway.
Still no Hawkeye.
Yeah, he's busy putting up a new bathroom in his farm.
His farm.
Yeah, he's retired.
Jordan, what about you, man? Any thoughts on the trailer?
I unfortunately haven't been able to see it yet. So
I'm sorry. I thought you watched the game because we were talking about it earlier. So
no, I can't stand football at all. To be honest.
I wish you had told me before you. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. It's fine.
Everything's fine.
All
right, we're gonna talk cult films now.
All right, do you want to define what that means for anybody who doesn't know?
Okay, so it's kind of difficult to become a cult film. You have to have a very poor box office showing for one reason or another. You can have critics completely excited about you and try to talk you up, but then nobody goes because it's a little weird. It's a little off-putting. Maybe it's too dark. Maybe it's just slightly outside of your comfort zone. Maybe you don't even hear about it because the marketing is so bad. But instead, it does really well with DVD sales, Blu-ray sales later on. They have re-releases, and the fandom of it is absolutely incredible. These are the people that can recite the movie from beginning to end. They're the ones that, you know, completely turn around in a grocery checkout line or a subway, and they're like, oh my god, you've seen that movie? That's what this is about. We're talking about our favorite cult films. I expect a lot of overlap here because it's not easy to get a cult film. There's only about, people say there's only about 400 cult films, and let's face it, like 300, 400 films are releasing just this year. So it's kind of difficult to achieve this status. So probably going to talk about a lot of the same films.
I know we wanted to get kind of the big one out of the way.
Yeah, so
it's a good, just a good example of a cult film. So
the cult film, the number one cult film, it's Rocky Horror Picture Show. The fandom behind it is absolutely insane. It is the longest running feature film. It's never been taken out of theaters because there are midnight showings all across the country at all times. So you can find a showing in theaters of Rocky Horror somewhere in this country right here, right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Alamo Draft House here in town does it every couple of months, it feels like.
Exactly. So they have like four or five showings a year just of that. So what happened with the Rocky Horror, it was on stage first. Richard O'Brien wrote it, and somebody else directed it because Richard O'Brien was doing multiple roles in the film. He's best known for Riff Raff.
Yeah, don't, he did a second movie.
Shock Treatment.
Yeah, don't watch that one.
That one was awful. And it deserves its awful status.
But one of the big things about Rocky Horror, for people who don't know the big cult following behind it, is people go dressed up to the movies. So they'll go in drag and crazy costumes and things like that and sing along. And
a routine mm-hmm. that people do. They bring certain items to the show and they yell certain things at certain times. And it is a cult.
It's also a musical, which, at least as far as my list is concerned, is really the only musical mm-hmm. That had cult status. But Jordan's shaking his head, so I'm curious to see what he's got.
I have a musical on mine.
You do? Okay. Yeah. Ryan, do you have any musicals?
No.
Okay. But it's got some great music. It has one of my favorite Meatloaf songs, actually, in the movie. But it's a weird one. It really is. There's a slightly different version. The UK release has some extra scenes in it that weren't in the US version.
Yeah, the Rocky Horror debuted in 1975. It did well in one theater in the United Kingdom, and then everywhere else it failed. It tanked. So the studio convinced it to only run it at midnight because those showings were doing well for Plan 9 from Outer Space. And that's how it developed its cult.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it a few times. I'm not as big of a fan as probably at least two to three of the people at the table are.
But you recognize that it's
like... Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I can appreciate it for what it was. But I've never been one to go to the movies and like yell at the screen and sing songs.
We tried that once with you. It did not go over
well. Not for Rocky Horror, though. To be fair, we picked, I think, a poor movie choice for that experience for Ryan.
Maybe. But
I've never seen Rocky Horror in theaters. I've only ever seen it on DVD. You have, Jordan?
I've actually gone to a Denver showing. I usually go out to Colorado for Halloween every year with my family, and there was actually a showing in Denver, and we went out to it. And it was just a great time. You got to hang out with people afterwards, talk about the movie. A couple cool riff raffs and just hanging out.
Did you dress up?
I did not. I didn't.
You did, right?
I've dressed up seven times.
Seven times?
Yeah. I've played Magenta, Janet, and Columbia. Columbia is my favorite because of the high-pitched voice and the tap shoes, but...
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. My dad used to go, which is a fun thing to learn.
I learn new things about that man.
He was an interesting guy, yeah. Because if you knew him, you wouldn't ever think that that would be something he would want to do. But
no. Your dad looked like Santa, so...
I think it had something to do with Meatloaf, though, because he was a big Meatloaf fan. But
who isn't? All right, let's move on. So, Jordan, you want to go first?
Well, I'll pick one of my cult ones. It's actually kind of recent, and it's kind of similar to Rocky Horror. It's called Repo: The Genetic Opera.
Nice.
That's a fun movie.
It's not really well known because the only advertisement I've ever found for it was on a Saw movie, and that's how I found out about it. And it was because it was by the two producers of Saw, and then I was like, that looked kind of interesting, so I went out and I found the DVD and I popped it in, and it's got a good cast.
It's got a weird cast.
Yeah, but it's got some good ones that I've seen in other movies before. The only thing I didn't like, there is Paris Hilton in it. So that's about the one thing that that's about the one thing that ruins it for you.
Paris Hilton has a decent voice, so at least she doesn't screw it up, and she's not a huge part of it, so you can easily ignore her. But Sarah Brightman, who's one of the best opera singers in the world, stars as Blind Mag. And then, of course, if you're a Buffy fan, Giles is the main character. So that's cool.
Interesting. I didn't know that. I've actually never seen it.
Me neither.
So good job, Ryan. High five.
Yeah, I'm killing it tonight.
Ryan is very sleep deprived right now.
Fair enough.
But yeah, this movie was not very well marketed, and
it was what I learned about many years after it had come out, so I didn't even know it was a thing.
Sadly, it came out at the exact same time as the Jude Law and Forest Whitaker movie Repo Men. And it has the exact same premise where you can't pay off your medical bills, then repo your transplant organs.
So it's the ants to the bug's life.
Yes.
Okay.
Just very, very darker. And the cool part is, like I was saying, it's similar to Rocky Horror, because there are still places that sometimes do shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll actually, you can dress up like some of the different characters from that. And they've actually taken it on the road a couple times throughout America and other countries.
Huh.
If you want to catch it and you're here local in KC, or I guess St. Joe, Crypticon does a showing every year.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
they'll do a sing-along after, like, I think it's on their Saturday night. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Ryan, what are you bringing to the table?
I've got my list here.
Of course you do.
Handy dandy list.
I gotta pick which one. I wasn't planning for this. Okay. So we talk about a lot of these movies that are on my list a lot. So I'm going to try and avoid those for the moment. I'm going to go with Earth Girls Are Easy.
Oh, such a good movie.
Oh, that's so great.
I discovered this movie on like TBS or Comedy Central or something when I was a teenager. If you aren't familiar with it, it's an 80s movie starring Jim Carrey, Marlon Wayans.
Damon Wayans.
One of the Wayans. Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis. I mean, it's got those for the 80s. Some of those guys were not big names in the 80s. Gina Davis was a pretty big name in the 80s. But it was like a debut for
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey for sure, and possibly the other two in terms of like something that actually, you know, caught on later. Because it wasn't good at the time. People didn't go see it.
Right.
But it's about aliens that come to Earth. They come to, like, the hills or, like, you know, somewhere in California, the Valley of California or something. And
like, their ship crashes in our pool, right?
Right. The ship crashes in our pool, and they're all, like, super hairy aliens in all different colors. And she's, like, a hairstylist, or her friend's a hairstylist. And they go and they shave them, and they just look like
totally normal.
Normal people, yeah, no razor burn or anything, but they, they go on some wacky adventures and,
Think that scene in Jurassic Park is sexy with Jeff Goldblum? You haven't seen his arrival. There's some sexy Jeff Goldblum scene. He walks out shirtless, looking amazing, and I'm sitting there as a little girl, like.
I think that his shirt buttons only ever got to about here in that movie.
I remember seeing this and watching the scene where she's about to have sex with him, and she takes like her entire month's worth of birth control then and there.
Right. And to clear up, she was about to have sex with an alien.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And my mom turns to me and she's like, "Don't do that. You'll have a mustache by morning." I had no idea what she meant or what was going on. I just knew my mom had a weird reaction. That's all.
Yeah. I've loved that movie since a fairly young age. It's
fairly kid friendly. You know, there's a lot of sex stuff that
happens.
It was
innuendo.
Yeah. It was on some channel, you know, TNT or TBS or USA or something like that back in the 90s.
I think it was Comedy Central, because I swear I watched it on Comedy Central.
I'm sure it was too. I mean, this was some like normal cable channel in like 94 or something like that I saw it on, you know. And I knew Jeff Goldblum because I watched weird movies at a very young age. So I'd already seen The Fly a few times.
Yes.
You know, which is might be my favorite Jeff Goldblum movie.
Oh, it's so good.
But Yeah, that's a movie where he simultaneously, like, he looks really great and it's really amazing. Disgusting all yeah. in the same film. If you've never seen his remake of The Fly, whew.
For me, it was weird because I had seen movies, because these guys had gotten more popular since the movie came out, and I had yeah. seen them in much more, you know, I had seen Ace Ventura, so I knew that one, and I had seen Blank Man, which is where I knew Wayans from, and then I had seen Jurassic Park. So, and The Fly, or, yeah.
yeah.
So, I knew Jeff Goldblum, and, you know, it was weird for me seeing them in that way so young versus sure. what I knew them as, you know, in my day, which was in the 90s, so. Mm-hmm.
This was, like, during the first season of In Living Color, which is why those two were cast, so.
So that's interesting.
It was Jim Carrey's, like, theatrical debut.
He was great. The yeah. impression of a Valley Girl, them all doing, like, Valley Girl impressions, was so good.
It was really great. So chat's got some interesting stuff. So RenBuff12 actually went to high school with the director of Repo.
That's neat.
So that person is actually local here. Went to Shawnee Mission North High School, for anybody who's local to the Kansas City area. So that's kind of neat.
Your turn.
My turn. Okay, so I'm going to go with my first one, which is the oldest one on my list, because I put them in chronological order. And that is Plan 9 from Outer Space, 1959. The Crazy Ed Wood. Bela Lugosi's last film, sadly, and it is considered it's up for the argument of the worst film of all time, that and, you know, Mano's Hands of Fate. Those are the big two that people usually argue about, and so that's really where its cult status came from, is that it's just this terrible movie. I mean, so Bela Lugosi died during the production of the film and wasn't done filming his parts yet, so Ed Wood got his chiropractor to finish the movie. And so for the rest of the film, Bela Lugosi's playing like a vampire Dracula type, like he, you know, like he did.
Like one does.
And that's what he did mostly. And so because of that, he had a cape, and so his chiropractor just holds the cape in front of his face. You can just see his eyes for the rest of the movie, so no one would know it's not Bela Lugosi.
Wow.
Which is just one of my favorite
things about it. Why didn't they do the Dr. Parnassus Heath Ledger trick, where they just switch him up?
Well, you know, it was a little early for a big twist like that, and Johnny Depp just wasn't available. But
he did play Ed Wood.
But the movie cost $60,000 to make. I tried really hard to find some box office numbers for this, but it is a really old movie, 1959, and that was something I was not able to find. So if you do know, I'd love to hear it. All black and white. I've seen it many times. It is a truly terrible movie.
I have not seen it.
It's one of my favorite bad movies to watch. It really is, because just what it took to actually put it together and put it out is really just funny in retrospect. I'm sure Ed Wood did not think it was hilarious that people were making so much fun of him, but, you know, he is partly famous because of it.
Probably mostly famous because of it.
Yeah.
I know. I was trying to be nice.
In
case he's watching, yeah. Has anyone else seen Plan 9?
I've seen Ed Wood.
Chat has seen Plan 9? Okay, Doc Rev saw it. Okay. Yeah, I actually own it. I have it on DVD if anyone ever wants to watch it.
I'm good.
Thank parties you, at Derek's.
Party at my place. All right, fine. Whatever. Ray.
Okay, so when I was in high school, I got EW's copy of their best.
I feel like this is going somewhere.
It is.
Stick with it, Derek. It's a long walk.
Their best cult films of all time. So that summer, I went on a bender and watched every single one of them. And the first one I watched was The Warriors.
Never seen it.
Movie in 1979. It is based on a book of the same name. It is about a group of gangs, giant group of gangs, thousands of people in this, like hundreds of gangs, that meet up and they have a speech of, they watch this guy Cyrus do a speech of unity and telling him to stop fighting and coming together. And just as everybody was like, yeah, we're not going to fight anymore, Cyrus gets shot, and he's dead. And a rival gang says it was the Warriors, so the Warriors have to make it back to their turf, Coney Island, safe.
They have to come out to play?
Yes, okay. They do. Thousands of people are going to try and kill them for killing Cyrus. So they have to get from point A to point B, and it is a lot of fun. These gangs are ridiculous. There's one group of all females called the Lizzies. Guess what they were supposed to be?
Lizards.
Got it. Nailed it.
Yes. I'm so good at these games.
There were the Furies, which are baseball guys with bats that have tons of face paint on them. And, like, it was a fun movie. I have stopped really liking it because there's a lot of rape. A lot of rape jokes. A lot of guys just saying they're going to do it. And I'm like, this is cool. We can pass now. But
so why'd you keep it on your list?
I kept it on my list because of how influential it was on me in high school. Seeing, like, you remove that, those, like, four or five little lines about rape, about how it's so easy, and you still have a good film in there. So I'm trying to take it for a product of its time. It's really hard for me not to have that lens on now, but... fun fact, it's not fun. It's not a fun fact, right?
Are you trying to steal my thing?
Yeah.
Is the fun fact that it's not a fun fact?
It's not a fun fact. Not fun fact. Sad fact. There were so many riots and vandalism after some of the showings that the studio let theaters out of their contracts so they could stop showing it.
Wow.
Three people died. Yeah. Two in California, one in Boston.
That is a fun fact.
It's not fun. But that is why it... tanked at the box office, because after two or three days people were dying, and so wow. They were like, nope, done.
That's intense.
Yeah, not fun fact.
Okay,
Jordan, your turn.
I'm gonna go with, I'd probably have to go with Kevin Smith and go with Clerks.
That was on my list.
You gotta have it on there. I mean, especially for a movie that used all his money, maxed out credit cards just to try to pull it off, and just a classic movie. I mean, you really...
I did not have that on my list. I am probably one of the weirder people that actually likes Clerks 2 better than the original Clerks.
Clerks 2 is solid. Yeah. It is...
It's a good movie.
I don't think it qualifies for the cult as much, but yeah. I mean, the original Clerks was fine. I just... There's a lot of, like, monologuing... Or not... There's a lot of just, like, shots of two people talking.
Which is why I like it.
It's got a little tedious for me, personally, but... I did think it was good, and I have watched it multiple times, but, you know, it isn't in my favorites.
It's just one of mine, and I like how that started. I mean, I feel like that's where you get from with Kevin Smith, and then everything just leads back to that, and we're still waiting to see, is he ever going to try to make a 3? We're still hoping for a 3.
I think there will be another Jay and Silent Bob before there will be another...
I agree.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
I honestly think that Kevin Smith is done with the Viewisk universe. He tried to do a Mallrats show, and it fell through when Shannon Doherty was positive for breast cancer and had to go through chemo because he said he wasn't going to make it without her.
Which I understand.
Also, tough. Weinstein was a big part of his early movies.
Yeah, and I mean, Weinstein and Miramax went hand in hand, so...
He definitely wants to separate himself from that, so I don't know if that would cause him to give up on the whole thing, but...
I don't know how much Miramax owns of the Viewisk universe at this point.
That's true.
But yeah. He makes some really quirky horror films now. Red State, Tusk, and Yoga Hosers are all connected.
That's true.
So, I mean, that's what he's doing. He wants to make movies with his kid, and I can't blame him. That's cool.
So, some fun facts about the original Clerks, because it is one of my favorite movies. Not just cult movies. I love the original Clerks. So, it actually, considering it only cost $27,000 to make, it made over $3 million. So it made its money back and then some. But it was never shown in any more than 64 theaters at the same time. So the fact that it made $3 million in just 64 screens when, like, a big blockbuster today is shown in 2,400 screens, that's a big deal. To top it off, though, one of my favorite things about this is in the movie, for those of you who have seen it, the whole thing takes place in that convenience store, right? But he can't get the doors open. The big shades, right? Well, that's because they actually were only allowed to film there if they filmed at night while the convenience store was actually closed. So every shot that's inside the convenience store is shot in the middle of the night. And so they didn't want the windows open to show that it was night outside or have to artificially light it, which would have cost more money. So that's why there's gum in the lock and they couldn't open the sliding doors.
Savages.
Savages. Also, the big movie rental scene where he's just going through all of the porno titles.
Come on, Eileen.
Yeah, he was so uncomfortable doing that in front of the kid that he actually refused to.
Yeah.
And they were shot totally separately so that way he wouldn't have to say all that stuff in front of the kid. Which, when you think about what the character is and all the stuff the character says, it's pretty cool to think that there are lines and he, you know, was really just, it's part of the character and not who he really is, so.
Fun fact about me, ever since I've seen that movie, anytime I get a request from an elderly person, I say, "No Time for Love, Dr. Jones," and shimmy it away.
Okay.
I can't do that at my job, but I do it out in public.
So, just a few fun facts about the movie, so.
You had more than I had on that part, so.
That's what's great about these films, there's overlap, we all have some fun stuff to say. Ryan?
I'm trying to figure out what I want to go with. Okay, I'm going to go with something that's a little newer. Grandma's Boy.
Okay.
It's one of those movies that you either love it or you hate it. It's a comedy about a stoner video game tester that comes up with his own video game. And it's stolen by a large corporation. This is a lot like Derek's sitcom that he pitched a few weeks ago. If you
so I've
it.
Never seen Grandma's Boy.
Oh, really?
So it's very possible. I have no idea.
the big company that he works for gets their hands on the game and think it's great. And so they try and release it and take credit for it. And the guy lives with his grandma at the time. So that's where the title comes from. But it's a pretty funny movie. It really is, and it isn't all pot humor, which is usually a huge turnoff for me when like they make it a point to show that the main character's a stoner. Mm-hmm. There's some, but it's not an overwhelming amount. It's not like the entire basis of the movie. But anything with video games is always going to be a plus for me because I connect with it a little bit more because they've been an important part of my life. At one point we all wanted to be video game testers for a living, right? Anybody that played video games, that would be like the ideal.
Why are you saying it in past tense?
Right? Because I think now you realize it's probably not as glorious a job as you might have thought it was as a child.
I'd still do it.
Okay.
Just saying.
Yeah. Then you should probably watch the movie. It was pretty entertaining. Nick Swardson is in it. He's great.
We made him watch the movie.
Did we? I thought he'd
seen
it.
For New Year's.
I did?
Yeah. Yeah, we made you watch the movie. John Hills. Yeah. We were there for New Year's.
I thought I remembered something like that.
We made you watch it. And after
this was in their basement.
You hated the experience because we talked and laughed and quoted at the end.
Okay, so I blocked it out because I didn't get to watch the movie. No, that's okay. It's coming back to me now. We were hanging out in their basement and you guys wouldn't shut up. I don't like experiencing a movie that way for the first time, you know?
I get it. That's fine. You want silence and focus, and I get it. But it was too good. You can't not quote that film. Like, I still say, "Don't judge me, monkey."
I still say, "I want robot legs."
You
it's
do.
It's a risky operation.
You quote that guy all the time.
Yeah. Sometimes I take a coat and hide against the wall like this and pretend nobody can see me.
How does she see me?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Derek.
I'm getting some flashbacks.
Okay. So
it's back there somewhere.
You're allowed to go only if the movie that you say is also on Jordan's list so he can jump in and take yours.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought you were done talking.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Talk about a movie.
You should feel bad now.
I do. I feel terrible.
Like she said, there's going to be overlap, and you had more data ready than I did, so I'm not offended by it.
All right, well then I'm just gonna pick the next one on my list here, which is The Evil Dead, 1981, Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, the original film to start it all, The Evil Dead.
So I have this wonderful little thing in my head where like some movies are cult films, but some directors are cult directors, and I feel like no matter what they direct, you're going to get a cult movie out of them because nobody will take him seriously except for the small demographic. He's not really like that anymore. But
no, Spider-Man 3
all three
is
of the,
not a cult
no,
film.
It's not. But all three of the Evil Deads could be.
All three of the Evil Deads are cult films for sure. Although
all four.
Okay. I haven't actually seen the fourth one.
I don't know
if
that fourth one is a cult film yet or not. I don't know.
Well, it's part of the franchise, and it's actually a really good horror movie for anyone who
hasn't believe seen it. I just haven't seen it because I was more interested in Bruce Campbell by the end of Army of Darkness seeing a retake on the whole telling of the situation. But Jordan and I did have a discussion about this earlier, and I think it's kind of relevant that there's a point when a movie is not really a cult movie anymore because there's so many people like it. I'm not saying Evil Dead, the original, is like that way. I think we both pretty much said that the original Evil Dead would be the only one of the trilogy that probably actually qualifies for that, because that Army of Darkness and because of that Evil Dead, because it has similar tones, have all become very, very popular, probably beyond cult status, in my opinion. But
it's an interesting conversation, right? Because how popular does something have to become for it to lose
not
that
be a
status,
cult?
Right?
Yeah, not be a cult movie. Yeah.
Everything we've talked about so far has extensions. People have made video game adaptations or sequels either by themselves, like Shock Treatment or Clerks 2.
Who didn't see Earth Girls Are Easy 2, Electric Boogaloo? I mean,
I would have seen it.
I would have watched it.
The same cast? Hell yeah, I would go see it tomorrow.
Right? Oh my god, do that movie tomorrow!
They could do it.
Do it on Netflix and just post a trailer today.
Jim Carrey's even crazier. Let's do this.
No, I think it makes a really interesting point, and you know, The Evil Dead has some weird history behind it because it was essentially remade in Evil Dead 2, but obviously less serious and less gruesome, you know, more campy. But it's an interesting question because Army of Darkness made some decent money. It made like $14 million. They, you know, showed it in a bunch of screens and all that type of stuff, whereas the first two were made with pennies. The first one, I think, was just $350,000 budget. And never was in more than 128 theaters at the same time. So,
and I think only, like, if you're talking to Evil Dead fans or Army of
which
Darkness
all of
fans,
us are at
Bruce
this
Campbell,
table.
Sam Raimi fans, whatever, the majority of them will have seen Army of Darkness and Evil Dead 2, but probably not as many of them have seen the original Evil Dead, and probably even fewer of those actually like the original.
I love the original. It's my favorite.
It's the scariest. It is. It's not my favorite, but I mean, I can definitely respect it for what it is. And it is a good cult movie. I think it's definitely qualifies to be on this list. It's just one of those things where I have several on my list that it's like they're considered cult movies, but I don't know if I would consider them a cult movie just because of popularity. Anyway, that was an aside point.
It's a good point though, right? Because you now have, of course, Ash vs. Evil Dead on Stars. You know? It's like on a major premium network that's on its third, coming up on its third season. So it's obviously hit pretty mainstream at this point. So.
I still think that, like, of all the TV shows out there, it's still kind of a cult TV show because not everybody wants to watch a show where somebody's head gets shoved up somebody's butt and then, like, a penis is slapping them in the face.
I mean, that's true. That's true. But I think a lot of these big premium shows, they do kind of, you know, push themselves away from certain audiences. I mean, there are certain people that just don't want to watch Game of Thrones for the violence or for other reasons and stuff like that. And I think Ash vs. Evil Dead just kind of has its niche. It knows what it is. You know, it's a Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi gore fest, and if that's your thing, then you'll probably have a fun time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I'm going to talk about Office Space, because Mike Judge is a hilarious guy. If you don't know Office Space, then you're probably not my friend, but he also did Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill. He's had much more success with that. It came out in 1999. It has sold millions of copies of VHSs, DVDs, and Blu-rays. It's insanely funny. Mike Judge actually hated what the studios did to it and believes that's why it did poorly.
Not a commercial success, yeah.
Yeah. He hated the poster with Stephen Root's character covered in Post-its. Everybody thought it looked like a bird. He hated the trailer because it wasn't an Adam Sandler film with funny quips that you could put in a 30-second, 45-second blip. Its jokes were longer and sly and kind of, you know, they were running jokes. The Michael Bolton thing is funny like 5 times because they bring it up all the time. And like, why should I change my name? And he's the one that sucks. Like,
it's like Superman 3.
It's a hilarious film. And it's one of those that I can quote from start to finish if you get me going on it. It's so relevant to my daily life. I always have a case of the Mondays.
That's another one I caught on Comedy Central or something like that I never saw in theaters or anything.
I didn't
know. And I caught it before, I don't know what year that came out, but I don't think I was really working.
99.
At the time, yeah, because I was still in high school, and I definitely not working in an office, so... You know, I thought the jokes were still funny and relevant, even though a lot of them were based around this scenario that was foreign to me. Mm-hmm. But that's, I think, the very telling of a movie. And yeah, Mike Judge is great. The movie is super quotable. I definitely agree with that one.
Now, Jordan, I thought I saw you cross something off your list. Was this one on yours?
Yes, it was. It was one of those ones for me. I swear I've seen it a couple times, but I never watched it all the way through. And one day, just going to Walmart, I found $5 bin. I'm like, I'll finally give it a shot. Popped it in, and I pretty much watched it like 3 times over the next week. And only thing I remember is like, I remember just having even a printer at my house and how much I wanted to beat the heck out of that thing with a baseball bat. I can only imagine one of them at a big, big corporation. It's like, I think we've all had that time where like, I hate this printer. I want to destroy it. So,
yep.
PC low letter. What does that mean?
It's like to have 8 bosses.
8 Bob. Yeah. It always was kind of close to me. I saw it before I started working at TGI Fridays, but certainly after I started working at Fridays, it really hit home because that's basically the restaurant that Jennifer
Aniston. It was based off of Fridays.
Yeah, for sure.
The Flair, like we had Flair. Right? Yeah. That was a thing that we had. And
did you ever get talked
to? I was about to say, did you have a minimum amount of pieces of Flair?
So it's different, at least
were you at the minimum or were you above the minimum?
Well, see, so at Fridays, at least back when I worked there, this was a long time ago now, over 10 years, you earned your Flair.
Oh.
You couldn't just pick stuff. You earned your Flair. It was all like official Fridays stuff. And so, there were things for doing certain activities, $1,000 in sales or, whatever, shift lead.
So it's like having achievements unlocked.
Yes. It was gamification back, before
gamification was named.
So that was kind of how that worked, is you earned your Flair.
Oh, so you didn't have to express yourself.
No, but we were not allowed to wear the suspenders.
Oh, that's too bad.
All the way. Yeah.
I would have liked to see you in suspenders. All right, Jordan.
I'm going to go with one that I know Ryan and me have talked about the last couple days. This one's a cult classic for me, and that's just called The Crow.
Ah, The Crow.
The Crow.
Brandon Lee's death movie. I don't know if there's an actual word for a death movie of an actor, but...
Your first and final film, because you're murdered,
Just by some guy not fixing a prop the proper way and lodging a bullet in your heart.
Still maintain that's on purpose.
But, you got good ones in there. You got Ernie Hudson in there just for a little extra. I can never remember I know his name is Top Dollar, but I can't remember the villain's actor's names, but I know I've seen him in a lot of different stuff before. And it was just it's a good movie for me. It's in my top 5 all-time movies that I've ever watched. I own the soundtrack. I have the 20th anniversary edition case and everything. And we just don't talk about any of the sequels, though.
Oh, God, they're so bad. Tara Reid's in one.
That, we don't talk about that one.
Being in a movie doesn't make the movie bad.
It did. It just did.
The American Pie movies were pretty good. The first 3. First 2. The third one was mediocre.
Okay, I wasn't thinking about
that. That was a walk.
It was a walk. I was working it out of my head. It was an actual walk happening.
How do you feel about Momoa doing the new adaptation?
Oh, is that real? Is that actually happening?
Yeah.
I'd be very interested to see how that goes through. I know it's been thrown around a lot who's going to be doing it. I think even for a while, Bradley Cooper, I believe, was supposed to be the re-envision of The Crow. If they're going to reboot it and go with the original storyline, I'd love to see how they go with it.
So do you want them to reboot the movie and see that first film again in a different style, or do you want them to adapt the comic book again?
That's a tough one on that one.
That's a question.
I'd want to see the first movie again, actually, because... I fell in love with the movie first. I found the comic second. I didn't even know it was a comic movie until later. And like I said, I want to see the thing I fell in love with redone. And I think Momoa would actually do pretty good for that.
Okay.
It's, I don't know. That's a really tough one. Because like I said, I've read the comics afterwards, so it kind of went easier for me. But, yeah. You know, and I want to know how the movie would have been done if Brandon would have still been alive, mm-hmm. if maybe the sequels would have been with him more, if there would have even been more sequels. You know,
here's what I think about that movie. I don't think it's that great of a movie, personally. I think that on my list of movies, there's probably a handful of them that are more like, they've kind of turned into this edgy thing that, like, the Hot Topic shoppers want to watch, and The Crow is on that list, and maybe started that list. I think that if Brandon Lee hadn't died during that movie, that nobody would have even given it a second thought, and it would not be a cult status, and nobody would really be talking about it.
You are almost, like, 100% right with that. This is the penultimate goth film, and it's the Hot Topic goth. And I enjoy it because I saw it when I was a little kid, and it really, like, I grew up in a very abusive home as a kid, and it was nice to think that maybe somewhere out there was, like, the savior of some kind. So it was kind of like the fairy tales taken to a darker place, and that these bad guys would get punishment. So I was able to lose myself in it. But you're right, the cinematography in some of those scenes, not great. Aside from Ernie Hudson and Brandon Lee, the acting's not, like, top notch. I mean, it's those two are solid because they're good actors, but people surrounding them, I think, you know, probably not so much. But you're right, what achieves cult status is completely different. And I think because he died, it achieved cult status. Yeah.
I think that the story, I can't even remember if it was a video or what, but I read or watched something about how the bullet actually got into the gun and the failure of all these people and how that all actually happened. And that was actually more interesting to me than the actual movie.
Interesting.
For whatever reason. I'm not trying to crap all over this movie because, you know, you obviously don't necessarily fit the criteria of the people that we're talking about that are traditionally liking that movie. And I'm sure you have different reasons. But I think that a lot of people like it just because it's the edgy thing. And there's, like I said, several other movies on my list that I think are probably would qualify for that for most people as well.
Fair point.
All right. Well, then, Ryan, what's your next one?
So I guess this is going to be our last one. So I got to make it count.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have so many more.
I know, right?
We'll do a lightning round. We'll go a little bit over. It's cool. Right.
So I'm going to pick one that I think definitely fits the criteria of cult film more than even a lot of the ones that we've already talked about. I think Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And I would actually not only put that one, but I would also put Life of Brian and some of the other ones that are probably less popular. But Monty Python for me is, my dad was a huge fan of Monty Python. And so he got me into Holy Grail, Life of Brian when I was older, Meaning of Life, Fawlty Towers, all the Monty Python stuff. I picked the Holy Grail because it's probably the closest to something that's actually got a cult following of all the movies. British humor is either love it or hate it. And there's a small dedicated group of people that really enjoy British humor. And I think that Monty Python did it probably the best it's been done. That movie was extremely creative. And just, you know, you can quote almost every line in that movie. And there's nothing I could nitpick at it, but it's really not worth it. Because the whole movie is supposed to be, like, cheaply made and, you know, have all these bad sets and things like that. So, you know, yeah, that's one of my favorites.
It was on my list. It was definitely on my list. I love that movie. It's probably one of my favorite films that I don't actually own. I just never got around to being able to pick up a copy that I wanted. But yeah, I've always loved that movie. The humor is great. I mean, that, you know, they see the castle and everything. It's only a model. Like, the movie was so aware of itself.
It was very meta before meta was, like, really a thing.
Exactly.
Have
you seen Life of Brian?
I have.
I actually think that one's better than Holy Grail for me personally,
because I like making fun of Jesus. From a quality perspective, I think you're right, but from just like a straight just ridiculousness perspective, I think Holy Grail is kind of almost that pinnacle level of what that type of comedy looks like for me. And I mean, I saw it first. I saw it much younger. I didn't see Life of Brian until I was
rightfully older. So.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't even really the reason. It was more of just I went out and sought it out.
Oh, okay.
You know, my parents let me watch really whatever I wanted, but it had more to do with what they were aware of. And,
right.
You know, if they were aware of
the not movie, aware of Life of Brian.
Right, that was the thing, right? So, like, you know, Monty Python and the Holy Grail would be on TV, and my dad would watch it, and I would watch it with him. Life of Brian wasn't really going to be on regular cable.
And if it was, it would be neutered to the point where it probably isn't funny anymore.
Right.
So, literally balls removed because there is some of that in the movie.
Yeah, there's a naked dude throughout the entire film. The Holy Grail was something that I fought for a while, because in the seventh grade I had a really cute boyfriend who would come up and shout knee at me all the time.
Knee.
And imagine being greeted at 6:50 in the morning like that every day for 4 months.
I don't want to be greeted at 6:50 in the morning in any
it was
way.
Awful. It was awful. And this guy wouldn't relent. So I finally watched it, and I didn't want to tell him that I liked it because I was pissed he had done this to me for 4 months. But I loved it, and I still love funny. It. And I'm really sad that we haven't done like a group of galloping nights.
I'd rather do a group of the knights.
The knights say knee.
Yeah. Oh, or, yeah. No, or no, the knights that say, Eki, Pekang, Zupoing, Bao.
Knights who formally said knee. Oh, man.
You must cut down the tallest tree in a forest with a herring. Bring us a shrubbery. Yeah, those are the best guys
so
in the movie.
So good.
What is the airspeed velocity of Unleaned Swallow?
Or Brave Sir Robin.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we should probably not quote that for the entire rest of the
podcast. Let's move on.
Derek, your turn.
All right, so is this really like the last one that we're going to go through?
Is that we're going to actually talk about? Probably.
In detail, yeah. Okay. We're going to have a lightning round.
I'm going to go with my personal favorite. This is actually one of my favorite movies, hands down, ever. I could probably just watch it on a loop for a really embarrassingly long amount of time, and that is Clue.
Which we've talked about a handful, or maybe a dozen, or maybe double that the amount of times.
Just wanted to mention it because it is a cult film. It has a pretty incredible cast, but it didn't do particularly well. It had a $15 million budget, and it did not make it back in theaters. I would imagine at this point it probably has in $3 bin DVD sales, but it's actually the only movie on my list that did not make its budget back. As far as my cult movies are concerned, which is interesting. Big cast, fun theater showings where they would show one of three random endings, and you know the DVD gives you the choice to watch all three of them if you want to do that. They're remaking it now with Ryan Reynolds on board for some role that we don't know yet, and I am very curious to see what they do with it. But I just, you know, that's my favorite, one of my favorite movies ever.
We just watched it on Friday or Saturday.
We did. And I'm like obsessed with trying to figure out like what the real ending is supposed to be. I don't think it's any of the three that they actually filmed, but I'm still trying to work it out in my head what the actual truth is.
Fun fact, you can't because there are mistakes.
There are mistakes, but I'm dedicated. There must be some logical explanation.
On Derek's deathbed, he's going to get ready to tell us what it is. He's finally figured it out, and then he's going to die before he actually tells us what
the
it was.
Killer is.
Yeah, exactly.
He just pulls his unplug.
Yeah, just for drama. Just for dramatic effect.
Alright, so you want to do the lightning rounds?
No, it's my turn.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I thought you went
first. Always forget the round.
Because I think you go first because you kind of run the order, so.
Whatever. No, I don't go first. I usually go last.
So then go.
Alright, so there's a lot on my list left. I'm going to talk about the film that is critically the absolute best that's probably on my list. It's just phenomenal. And it comes from one of those directors who is a cult director. That's Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yes, I'm actually surprised that nobody has said that one yet.
So it's probably the newest on my list as well. Came out in 2010. It is based off of a comic book series, 6-book comic books. They're like trades, kind of, by Brian O'Malley. And who is half Canadian, half Korean. It's an incredible movie from start to finish. It's got a cast of people that range from all stars who have been acting for their entire lives, like Michael Cera and Chris Evans, and it has up and comers like Brie Larson and Aubrey Plaza and Anna Kendrick, and it's got unknowns that stole the show like Ellen Wong and Alison Pill. So it had such great critic reviews but failed at the box office, and maybe it was too quirky for people, maybe it was just a little too detailed, but Edgar Wright poured his heart and soul into that film, and I actually think it's his best film. But I know that I'm going to get argued with later, either online or in person. Maybe I'll get dumped tonight. I don't know. But I think it's his best. I think he put the most detail into it. I think he put the most heart into it. And I think everything that came out of that film is wonderful. I never want it to be touched again. Like, there was a fun 8-bit video game that I played for a little bit, but I don't want any sequels. I don't want any follow-ups. Like, let this be perfect and it's nice little bubble. Don't harm it.
Part of me thinks it may have just been ahead of its time. I think if a movie like that were released today
it would have been better. Yeah,
it's possible.
Yeah, I think that movie, every shot is packed with something for you to like analyze and see a second time. It's a masterclass of passion filmmaking for mm-hmm. sure. The scene where the twins and Sex Bob-omb have the
battle,
that's one of my favorite scenes of any movie, because I think that the way that they showed the music fight in terms of like making it into an animal mm-hmm. And having the animals fight was just a beautiful way of handling music, and it won art form into another art form, and the whole thing just kind of came together for me at that point, and I thought it was really great.
Had to do it like that. Edgar Wright wanted only actors who were Canadian or American. The twins, however, were Japanese and could not speak a lick of English. They couldn't adapt the fight like it was in the comic book, where they talk and they have banter, and they just couldn't. So that's how they handled it, and it was awesome. 10 minutes of a CGI battle, and both are playing really great music,
and the soundtrack is something that's often overlooked, but I think most of it was by Beck, and they like mm-hmm. were made to play like a garage version of themselves, which they already are kind of garage band, but I mean, you know, songs that are just bad, but they're like really catchy, you know, mm-hmm. singing about a garbage truck, for example. But then you get the other band, Evie's
Clash
band, Clash at Demon Head.
Yeah.
And I have songs from Sex Bob-omb and Clash at Demon Head on my Spotify playlist because I think that the soundtrack was brilliantly done.
So good.
Soundtrack's phenomenal.
Brandon Routh, we didn't mention.
Brandon Routh is in it. Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, that was the film I'd first seen with her, and I thought she was great.
When Edgar Wright got a hold of the script, that was the first person he had cast in his head. He hadn't even approached her yet, and it was because he said Mary Elizabeth Winstead was the happiest, most optimistic person he had ever met, and he wanted to see that version of her that was grounded but also broken inside. He's like, I still want to see a happy person, but someone who's just been through the ringer. He thought she could do it.
He was right.
She did.
The movie is better every time I watch it. And we just saw it recently.
I notice more stuff every single time. Like, on the bus, when they're riding the bus together, every time you see Scott, there are hearts in the background. Every time you see Ramona, there are X's in the background. It's just those small things, like on street signs, on scrolling tickers. It's just crazy how awesome that movie is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's a movie you can only appreciate more with, you know, viewing it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right, lightning round. Jordan, what is everything else on your list?
Clockwork Orange is one I got on here. House of a Thousand Corpses.
Rob Zombie, another one of those cult directors.
Toxic Avenger was actually one I threw on there from the
80s. I love that one. I love the musical, too.
Boondock Saint, Donnie Darko. Donnie Darko.
I don't get Donnie Darko. I'm just going to say it.
That's fine.
I don't get it.
And just to not list off everything I have, I'll throw in Lost Boys, too. Lost Boys was the one I have to throw on my list.
I had Donnie Darko on my list too. That one kind of goes in the category of movies that I think edgy people want people to think they're intelligent, so that they say they like that movie and nobody else understands it. So
I had Boondock Saints on my list, and I think that's another one for the hot topic.
Fight Club is another one.
Yep.
But see, I have those movies on my list because I really like them, but
yeah,
I don't want to be in that group. Anyway, The Thing. I had Big Trouble in Little China, but we've talked about that a lot, so I didn't want to bring that up again. Princess Bride is another one. Labyrinth. Napoleon Dynamite,
we don't talk about
very much, but it's true. Like that one. Galaxy Quest, Shaun of the Dead.
So Galaxy Quest, I mean, it had a pretty amazing theater run, so I'm not sure it qualifies as a cult film.
Oh, I don't know.
It's beloved. Right? Sure. One of my favorite movies, but it has some theater records that are pretty interesting.
It made it on some of the lists. I wouldn't put it in, like, the top 10 cult films. It'd probably...
Top 10 cult films by definition of cult film, but I think that technically it's on a lot... IMDb considers it a cult film, and Wikipedia does as well.
Surprising.
Shaun of the Dead, Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah.
Edward Scissorhands, and Hackers.
Nice. It's a strong list. It has some movies on it that I just hadn't considered as cult films. But those are really good. I mean, Starship Troopers, that makes total sense. I love that movie. Yeah.
You're up.
All right, sorry.
You're good.
So I've got, Blade Runner, the 1982 one.
Yes, that is absolutely a cult film.
It barely made its budget back. This is Spinal Tap, which...
Yes.
I've never seen it, but I heard it's good.
I love it, but it actually has my favorite DVD menu of all time. So there's that. And then I also have the only other one on my list that wasn't on anybody else's, The Big Lebowski.
Oh, definitely a cult film.
With Tara Reid in it.
Yeah,
I had that one, but I just didn't want to... I figured somebody else was going to throw it out eventually, so I just kind of left it off my list, unfortunately.
That was going to be the next one I was going to talk about. So.
I think that's fair. It has its own convention now. It's crazy.
Lebowski Fest.
And isn't there a religion, like an official filed with the government religion, like Jedi?
I don't know if it goes that far, but it has to.
And look at Ryan, because he's a practicing Jedi.
Yeah, that's true. I am.
He wears his robes and his driver's license.
It does have to do with there are some interesting things with that. Yes. Yeah.
There's also one more you have on the table for our cult films, but no one's brought up The Fifth Element.
That's true.
Yeah. Great. Well, we've talked about that a lot. That's
I know, but
on my list.
I saw the DVD.
Your lightning round.
So Heathers from 1988. That was a fun.
I don't know that movie.
We'll definitely watch it. I had Boondock Saints. I had Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks is good.
Awesome.
It's probably the least popular Tim Burton film, but it might be my favorite Tim Burton film out of everything. I think some
of the recent Tim Burton films are less popular than that one. But.
I always forget it's a Tim Burton film.
Yeah, right? It has it doesn't look like an insane amount of cast. But that one's fun because it was based off of a cult trading card game. Right. Like, that's cool. And then I had to talk about John Waters because, like, everything he does becomes a cult, like Pink Flamingos and Hairspray. But I first got into him by watching Crybaby, which was one of Johnny Depp's first roles after, obviously, Nightmare on Elm Street and 21 Jump Street. So many streets. Mm. But that's a hilarious movie starring, like, Ricky Lake and Iggy Pop. It's got a weird cast, but it's fun.
Fascinating.
Yeah. That's my lightning round.
Cool. All right. Well, if we left anything off the list that you guys think are fantastic cult films, let us know. You can hit us up at Heroes Podcasts on Twitter and Facebook, or go to heroespodcasts.com and comment on the episode. You can, of course, join us live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central at twitch.tv/heroespodcasts. And you can chat with us like several people did tonight. So thank you, everybody who tuned in live with us. The show is available in a bunch of places: Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, Spreaker, which is just a bunch of different places that you can find us. So go subscribe, rate, review. Guys, where can people find you?
Planet Comic Con in a week and a half.
Planet Comic Con.
I was getting to that, but Ryan is Buster Props.
Yep.
Jordan, how about you?
Augustus Clockworks Cosplay Compendium.
You gotta cut that thing down.
just look up Steampunk Bane on Facebook. You'll find me.
There you go. Ray?
Siren Ray. Same place as last time.
And I am the Star Trek dude. You can find us at Planet Comic Con in a week and a half.
Yes.
Buster Props will have a booth. Siren Ray will have a booth.
I'm apparently neighbors with Abby Darkstar, but everything changes last minute, so we'll find out.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
We will have...
She's a lovely lady.
Absolutely. We will have three panels at Planet Comic Con this year. Friday, Screen Heroes will be ranking the live-action Star Wars films. On Saturday, Red Shirts and Runabouts will be wrapping up Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery. And on Sunday, Costume Couture will be bringing out their LGBT plus and cosplay panel.
Woo.
I think that is everything. So thank you for listening to the very end. We will catch you all next week.